This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
That brings us to 7:09. Before we move on to our final story of the day, and in fact the week, a look back at some of the messages that we've been getting all day. So our 6 o'clock hour really focused on Malaysia and human rights because we secured a seat on the UN Human Rights Council, and we were asking you what you think are some of the more pressing issues that we need to look at. And a bunch of thoughts. So Russell says, congratulations to us for this. The first thing the government must do is accord all the stateless children born to Malaysian fathers and mothers with the correct citizenship, which is a great point, Russell. And then Stephen says, when speaking about human rights, I just can't stop thinking about the current pressing issues like Sajat's extradition, the child nationality status of Malaysian mothers, and how people in Parliament treat female MPs. There's so much more that needs to be done in our country to earn us the worthiness to be part of the UN Human Rights Council. And yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty fair selection looking through the recent run of current affairs. On that point about female MPs, I think we've been talking about how we haven't actually ratified or been a signatory to that many conventions in comparison to how many there are and how many we probably should be signed on to. But one of the ones that we are committed to is CEDAW, and which is focused on the elimination of discrimination against women. And if you think about the fact that the ones that we have signed on to, we are still not seeing placed in full effect in our country, that perhaps paints a picture of how we prioritize it, but it also perhaps paints a picture of the UN, which is what KW is getting at, saying, why are we so excited with this HR Council seat? It just puts us on the same level as China, Venezuela, Somalia, Saudi Arabia, and Cuba. And KW, I mean, you're right. This is something that we raised in our first interview, actually, the fact that the Human Rights Council is not without controversy and that countries with a pretty regressive and repressive record when it comes to human rights have actually had seats. And this is one of the things that they are widely criticized for. So you raise a fair point. But nonetheless, if we think of it as what our first guest, Firdaus Husni, mentioned, as potentially pressure for our government to take the right steps to start prioritizing human rights a bit more, then maybe there's reason for optimism. Looking back, though, before Inside Story, we touched on what I was pretty excited to discuss. It's kind of a funny little thing. A survey found that Malaysians have ranked politicians the least trustworthy professions. I can't stop mentioning, actually, that journalists are the sixth least trusted. Clearly, I'm slightly bitter about that. But the most trustworthy, meanwhile, doctors, teachers, scientists. So we were asking you whether you agree with the findings of the survey and what you think is the most or least trustworthy job. And we have so many messages. So Laif says, surely the least trustworthy now are paid bloggers and social media influencers. Kasihan politicians. And that kind of tone, kasihan politicians, is one that we're getting quite a lot of. But you raise a good point, really, about the paid bloggers and social media influencers. I think perhaps they are being lumped in with advertising executives, which is the third least trusted. So they are kind of, I suppose, there in, if you think of it as a sort of updated version of that profession. Meanwhile, we have Munif, who says, some building contractors will give politicians a good run for their money. Look around your house. Do you truly believe that all those walls are bricks or reinforced concrete? Try construction site debris haphazardly packed with cement instead. And Munif, you paint a scary picture, but I'm not sure whether the list specifically named building contractors. It would be interesting to see how that goes. Meanwhile, Sarah says, I don't think it's actually helpful to lump the categories together for comparison. There's always a few black sheep among the herd. I, for one, heard of a GP in town whose conscience got eaten by dogs and is all about money. Trust is built over time and is reassessed, whether towards politicians, teachers, or even someone dear to you. Live and learn, I guess. But then I must say that I also personally know a GP who is well-respected and loved for taking patients seriously, listening and giving time. He does not hurry the consultation. Now, how many GPs do that? He is both credible and professional, and what's more, he charges very reasonably. I guess he's a doctor because it's a calling. And yes, we had a few comments actually, Sarah, about generalization that agreed with you. And I think that there is definitely that. And there's also a reason why the most trustworthy professions are the ones that have direct human contact with people, doctors, teachers, and so on. Because I think it's harder to generalize compared to more high profile professions, such as politicians, such as ministers, where the people who are gauging whether they're trustworthy or not wouldn't have had those personal interactions with them, right? And then perhaps it's easier to sort of tar with one brush. But keep those thoughts coming, whether it is about human rights in Malaysia and how well we're doing and what you'd like to see us focus on, or when it comes to trustworthy professions, who do you think has the most or least trustworthy jobs? I mean, so far, politicians rank very lowly, doctors rank very highly, journalists are on the lower end of the spectrum, along with advertising executives, for instance. Teachers are joining doctors up top. So what do you think of this? You can let us know. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to look at the appointment of an advisor, in some senses, to the Prime Minister. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
It is just coming up to 7:17 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. So UMNO Information Chief Cheryl Hamdan has been appointed Economic Director in the Prime Minister's office. But there are some questions, I think, about the appointment and the role itself. So we want to get into it. Now, this happened on Tuesday and subsequently Cheryl thanked the Prime Minister and expressed his appreciation for UMNO President Datuk Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi for allowing it. And if we look at what the role itself encompasses, it includes helping with the recovery of the macro economy and assisting the existing economics team. Currently, Dato' Sri Mustafa bin Mohamed serves as the Minister of Economic Affairs in the Prime Minister's Department for the third term. And I think some of the questions that have arisen from this is the need for the role itself, I suppose, and what exactly, I mean, there's some expectation or explanation there of what it is that the role is going to cover. But I think in understanding what the overlap is with the people who are already in the Economic Affairs Department, you know, what exactly the accountability is going to be, I think, in terms of KPIs and the like. These are all the questions that we tend to ask whenever it is that there is an appointment like this. So that's why we wanted to talk about it. For what it's worth, while this is an economic director position, there has also been another appointment of a special advisor to the Prime Minister as recently as October 2nd. Datuk Sri Azalina Osman Said was appointed Special Advisor of Law and Human Rights to the Prime Minister. So I think it's worth talking about this also in the context of people fussing over, rightly, the size of the cabinet and whether the cabinet should be leaner. And I think extending that conversation a little bit further to look at people who don't hold a cabinet or ministerial position, but who nonetheless are directors, advisors, or hold similar sorts of capacities. So we want to know, what are your thoughts on this? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. For more on this, we're crossing over to Iskandar Fariz, Communications Director at REFSA. Iskandar, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Trillian. Happy to be here.
So what is your take on the Prime Minister appointing an economic director?
Well, let me just lay down the context first. So some observers would say that it is common practice for Prime Ministers to have or appoint advisors. Even Tun Mahathir had appointed an economic advisor and other advisors during his tenure. At one point, there were even rumours that former Prime Minister Najib Razak would be appointed as an economic advisor to the current Prime Minister Ismail Sabri. And the current Prime Minister also has other bodies to advise him, namely the National Recovery Council, chaired by the former Prime Minister Muhyiddin. But I'd rather not focus on what we've done before, but what we should be doing forward and what are the best practices for that matter. The era of presidential premier or an all-powerful prime minister has come to an end. We need to accept that. This stems from the fact that no party has dominance over the other. Although we did some we did see some trying to exert that dominance throughout the past few years. But since 2018, we've had three prime ministers, three governments, all just within 3 years. And throughout this time, we've seen different permutations of partnerships with unlikely parties. So since Langkah Sheraton in February 2020, both governments succeeding in Pakatan Harapan only managed to secure a slim majority of 114. Recently, Ismail Sabri got 114. And he learned from the mistakes of the former Prime Minister Muhyiddin. And he established an understanding with the current opposition to inject some semblance of stability. So as 2022, there would be a likely party election within UMNO. So it seems like he is preparing to secure his position within his party now that external threats are somewhat not subdued, but managed.
So if we look then at this role, right, of economic director, what actually differentiates it from the Minister of Economic Affairs? Do we know?
So without more details from the announcement, it is really hard to say or determine the job scope and demarcation of duties between the two roles. But from the news report, it did seem that he will directly report to the PM. This raises questions whether he will be effective in his role, because ultimately it's PM making the direction or making the decisions. So more concerning, I think, for this move is the increasing concentration of power in the hands of the Prime Minister. Rather than appointing an advisor, I think Ismail Sabri should have empowered bipartisan parliamentary select committees, make them mirror ministries. So then you'll have one for economic affairs. There's already one for finance and economy. So maybe empower that so that you can recruit more professionals like economists, people from the industry can be roped into for policy making. So strengthen parliament, not really strengthen PMO.
I recognize that I sound like I'm just continuously, continuously pushing this agenda. But I think this idea comes from the fact that the Prime Minister has emphasized a high-performance cabinet, right? This is what he said. It's going to be a high-performance administration. And so with that in mind, for this role, do we know what the KPIs are expected to be and whether there's going to be a mechanism to track the performance?
I do hope I have the answers, but unfortunately, I am also on the same boat as you. The details are scant. I really do think, and I think the perception out there is that this is more of a political move rather than any necessity to it. As I said earlier, if he is sincere to include more people into the policy-making role, to strengthen economic moves, then special parliamentary select committees is the way to go. And Shahril Hamdan could have been co-opted into that if the necessary arrangement were made.
So you mentioned Shahril Hamdan. Let's talk specifically then about the appointee. What do you make of the choice? What experience does he bring?
I don't have a specific problem with him as a person. He does seem to paint a progressive view from the UMNO fold, which is kind of refreshing. And I think it's a way for the Prime Minister to brandish his progressive credentials to the urban voters. Shahril Hamdan is articulate and will likely be a spokesperson for the PM in some economic matters. It's still too early to tell since he got his role this week. He was a vocal critic earlier, so we will see whether he still pushes for the same agenda he was championing for before his appointment.
And are there policy ideas that he has mooted in the past that you would like to see come to fruition?
His emphasis on creating good jobs is likely aligned with what we stand. And I think REFSA also has been pushing for more pro-jobs policies. And I hope by having the Prime Minister's ears, he can manage to champion this as part of the agenda for building back better. But there are challenges in front of him, particularly the inter-ministries siloed approach, because ultimately, economics is still under the Minister of Economy. So we'll see how he navigates that kind of challenge in the coming weeks.
You mentioned earlier that this is a signal of sorts to champion youth or to champion progressive values, to elevate, I suppose, some elements of that from UMNO. But do you think that there is a sign that there is a real push towards incorporating these sorts of views and policies into the administration?
Well, I reiterate then my point earlier that rather than the personality, because appointing a personality can be a tokenistic approach, I prefer if the Prime Minister reform structurally, have a different structure. So when I mentioned about strengthening the parliamentary select committees, I mean allocate more resources to the PSSCs to be at least equivalent to the Public Account Committee. So every PSC should be provided with enough funding to meet their day-to-day requirements of running the committees. This includes a capacity to engage advisors, experts, and relevant professionals in different fields so that they can conduct hearings and inspection. So if we look at the US, the Senate there can conduct hearings and can call on ministers and civil servants to testify on certain matters. We can do the same here. Why not? So every PSC must have at least dedicated researchers with expertise in the knowledge of field. On top of that, grant researchers to all parliamentarians so that they can then boost their capabilities and capacities to enact and formulate better policies for Malaysia.
So we have seen Bagan MP and, of course, former Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng appointed into the Select Committee. What would you like to see the committee focus on, right? Were they sufficiently empowered, particularly when it comes to economic matters?
So in itself, the committee, the Select Committee that was that Bagan MP Lim Guan Eng was appointed to, is just tasked to appoint members to other special Select Committees. So it's like a committee of selection. Okay, you get this job, you get that job. So it's not really a policy-making committee, but in itself, it can work with other standing committees to reform the way we structure, the way we manage select committees in a way. So other things than I mentioned earlier, we need to ensure that committee proceedings should be live telecast on the internet so that the sittings can be seen in a transparent manner. We already have live telecast for the main hall, the main debate, the main house. So we need to have telecast for each of these meetings or proceedings as well. Ensure also that each ministries can be monitored by the respective select committees. Right now, at my last count, I think we have more than 80 MPs not accorded select committees role. So this can be looked into. Maybe we need to expand more special select committees so that each MPs, each lawmaker can serve a function in the policy making, in the decision making process. The problem we had last time when we were handling the pandemic at the onset was the siloed approach, the miscommunication between ministries. So this special select committees can be a platform for bipartisanship and to smoothen communication between the stakeholders and decision makers so that no more flip-flops, no more contradictory policies ended up being made in the future.
Iskandar, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Shirlene. Always happy to be here.
That was Iskandar Fariz, Communications Director at RIFSA, talking to us today about the appointment of an economic director to the Prime Minister's office, or in the Prime Minister's office. And that appointee was UMNO Information Chief Sharil Hamdan. We've been asking you for your thoughts. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.